Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
This is Little Atoms, a radio show about ideas and culture, with me, Neil Denny.
This week, Emma McBride talks about her latest novel, Strange Hotel.
Emma McBride's debut novel, A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing, won the Bailey's Woman's Prize for Fiction, the Carey Group Irish Novel of the Year, and the Goldsmiths Prize. The Lesser Bohemians won the James Tate Black Memorial Prize and were shortlisted for the Goldsmiths Prize and the International Dublin Literary Award. In 2017, McBride was awarded the inaugural Creative Fellowship at the Beckett Research Centre, the University of Reading. And Emma's latest book, which we're going to talk about today, is Strange Hotel. Emma, welcome to Little Atoms.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So, first of all, how would you describe this novel?
Well, I suppose it's about a journey within. A woman travels to a number of different hotel rooms around the world and thinks about her life and tries not to think about her life. And I suppose it's a novel about memory, about grief, about love, and about how linear language doesn't always solve all our communication problems.
So let's talk about, tell us something about our unnamed protagonist to begin with. The majority of the book, until a key point, is told in the third person. There's a first person section at the back, and we'll talk about why perhaps a little later on. So I'll say our protagonist rather than the narrator. Who is she?
Well, she's we don't know a lot about her. We know that at the beginning of the book, she's about 35. We know that she's traveling to these different places, and we can assume that it's not on holiday, but we don't really know why. We don't know particularly where she comes from. She's really just a kind of a middle-aged everywoman, I think.
So as you mentioned, it's a story of grief, of loss, of memory. And particularly thinking about the idea of grief, it somehow seems amplified by the setting of sort of a series of banal hotel rooms. So I want to talk about that idea to set it in a series of rooms.
Well, I suppose for myself, I've been travelling a lot and staying in a lot of hotels since A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing came out in 2013. And after a while, the kind of the glamour and wonder of staying in lots of hotels, having never done that much before, starts to wear thin, and the veneer of, ooh, does this one have nice toiletries I can steal? Or, oh, what's in the minibar? You know, the appeal sort of disappears, and hotels eventually all start to look the same. And I suppose when you're then still travelling around these kind of now dead places, you are thrown back on yourself in a very odd way that you aren't even when you're, shall we say, isolating at home, which we all indeed are at the moment, because there's nothing of yourself in those places, particularly in hotel rooms. There's literally just you and an anonymous world that you're surrounded by but have to live within for however long you're going to be there. And it just seemed like an interesting place in which to throw the character back on herself and her own resources.
And the fact that it's, to begin with, a third-person narration as well, considering this is such an interior novel, it acts as a further distancing device as well. And as I said, there's sort of a key point in the narrative where it turns to first person. We won't talk about why, but I want to talk about that decision to set it in those two registers.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is for a large part in the third person, but also that's kind of a trick because it's not really a traditional third person, as I think the reader realizes quite quickly. It's actually a very close third person, and the narrative is really the protagonist addressing herself, or trying not to address herself, rather than me as the writer describing to you, the reader, the various goings on of this character that I'm looking at. And so it's, you know, there are moments even within those third person sections where she accidentally slips into the first person and then scrambles back, trying very hard to get back out of it again, because that creates far too much intimacy for her. She's someone who's not really looking to delve deep into her emotional life. She's, in fact, very, very keen to do the opposite.
Indeed, she doesn't want to explore those feelings. And so in a lot of ways, it becomes a novel of procrastination as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And she, you know, the language is, I suppose, something different to what I had done before, although I think it's very closely related. But it's different in that it's grammatical and linear, and you know, there are clauses and all the punctuation is correct. But actually, rather than that facilitating communication, it's actually the protagonist's way of formalizing her own emotional life and putting it at a distance.
And so, I mean, I was going to ask about this, the idea that this book is, in terms of the language, different to the two previous novels. But at the same time, there is also this sort of stream of consciousness, interior sort of narrative going on as well, and I wondered how this novel has developed out of the previous two novels, how it relates to them.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, I mean, all the three books are very connected for me, and Strange Hotel, you know, it could be read as a kind of a loose sequel or an imagined sequel to The Lesser Bohemians if someone wanted to do that, but because the character is never named, that's not something that I'm kind of, you know, trying to state one way or the other. But I think in a way the first two books, the language is so experiential and about trying to allow the reader this very intimate access to the inner world of these much younger protagonists, and how the world just kind of flies at them and they are kind of knocked one way or another, and trying to find their feet with the immediacy of it all, and the reader with them at the same time. And here, the character is also very much affected by language, but she is trying desperately to be in control of it. And so there is a much more formal use of language here. And that's to do with the age of the protagonist. It's the first time that I've written a female protagonist who's, you know, more my own age. And, you know, the language, you know, it was interesting to think about how language changes for us, how we interact with the world through it as we get older. And of course, you know, when we're young, we allow things to happen to us because we don't yet know how to protect ourselves or what kind of effects things will have. But in middle age, you are much more aware of yourself and where your danger points lie. And so, you know, this language that she's building up around herself, it's kind of long and laborious sometimes and completely overly structured, is a way for her to protect herself from life and from her own life, from her own past, rather than anything that's happening on the outside.
Well, I wanted to talk about her age, because, I mean, you mentioned this is the first time you've written a character of a similar age to yourself now, but the character ages across the span of the book. It's a short book, and she ages decades over the span.
Well, about a decade.
About a decade, yeah, yeah. There's a point where it's mentioned that she's 35 and then suddenly she's in her mid-40s.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about that, the time span of the book, which, beyond her telling us her age, or beyond her describing her age, it's not signposted in other ways, the fact that, you know, a decade has passed in a conventional narrative or anything. I just wanted to talk about this idea of her trying to come to terms with these memories, not wanting to confront these memories, and that not changing over this time span.
Yeah, I mean, one of the kind of the pivotal points of the book is the idea of grief, and that she has suffered a bereavement, but she hasn't suffered it in her immediate past. She's suffered it some time in her past. And I suppose that was what I wanted to carry through, the idea of grief over time. And I think it's in a way it's more acute, and she's more brutal about rejecting thinking about it earlier on in the book. And as she goes on, it becomes the way that she feels about her own grief. It becomes much more locked down, in that it's a grief that's more bearable, but it's also the way that she's chosen to deal with it by not confronting it, by always trying to usher it away whenever it presents itself, has led to an increasingly deadened aspect taking over her emotional life. And yeah, I suppose I'm just interested in the idea of grief and how that changes over time, how that doesn't change over time, how, you know, once you're through the kind of the worst immediate awful experience of loss, how you come to live with that and to not be destroyed by it, and to continue on, but to never ever be able to live without that grief being inside you.
The part of the book towards the end, again, we don't have to talk about why, but she slips finally into the first person, and I thought that part was amazing, just the sort of control of both the memory, both like her almost narrating the first person as a much younger woman, but obviously it is actually being narrated in the sort of present day, and how those two sort of time streams almost mix up in that narration.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, the final section is she imagines herself in a hotel room that she may once have chosen to go to. And I suppose in terms of timelines and various realities at work at once, it's a bit of a complex moment, but she allows herself to kind of really feel it. And because she's imagining what happens in this room, or who she would have been in this room, she allows herself to be in the first person. She thinks she's safe to be in the first person because she's only performing an act of imagination. Whereas in the previous sections, you know, she's really there in it. She's kind of going through the moment and having those thoughts. And so it's only when she feels that she's safe in the imaginative realm that she allows herself to be in the first person.
You're listening to Little Atoms. I'm Neil Denny. Today I'm talking to Emma McBride, and we're talking about her latest novel, Strange Hotel. And the other thing that's going on with this woman throughout the story is, as well as dealing with these memories and ideas of grief and how that changes, she's also in a constant roiling relationship with her body and her identity as a woman. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think she, like a lot of middle-aged women, is completely infuriated by the idea of all the things that she's supposed to care about as a middle-aged woman, about having babies or not having babies, or getting older or getting grey hair. And, you know, she finds those things such a waste of time. And the notion that actually for middle-aged women, unhappiness is to be expected is just generally what's in store, and that's it. And I think that's a kind of a common enough infuriation for middle-aged women. And also, I suppose I wanted to write about sex, for casual sex for middle-aged women, that it's, you know, sex is always seen as a kind of, casual sex for a woman is always seen as a terrible act of self-harm or self-hatred. I thought it was interesting to write a character who didn't really see it in that way. He didn't sort of catastrophize the sexual experience, and was just kind of used it to fill in the time if she was a bit bored or a bit lonely, or, and, you know, she's not looking to, and I suppose in some ways this is a kind of connection to A Girl Is a Half-Form Thing. It's another female character that isn't looking for love, but is quite happy to have sex now and then, and but isn't looking for the love of her life to come and save her.
Well, I could not help but connect the meaningless encounters she has with these anonymous men in these hotel rooms as part and parcel of that whole sort of like wider trying to come to terms with loss in the past.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. I think for her the sex is just an activity in itself to be enjoyed, like sort of eating or drinking or smoking, and she does all of those things as well in the book. And it's just a kind of another appetite to be sated rather than something that is a kind of a driver of the terror of her life. And I think she runs into difficulties every now and then because, you know, some of the men expect a bit more or want a bit more from her, want a bit more of a connection or want to ask questions that she doesn't want to answer so it was just kind of fun to write a character who wasn't a woman who wasn't kind of getting her knickers in a knot about sex all the time.
Can we talk about how this novel came together? Because I understand it started out as a short story originally.
Yeah, well, I was, I was working on some other projects and I hadn't really been planning to write another novel for a while, and what I had in my head certainly wasn't this. And I just found myself with kind of odd moments of downtime and I started to write, and at first I thought it was just a short story, and but you know, as I was kind of wandering around taking the dogs for a walk or whatever, other scenarios would come into my mind and it kind of grew and grew. And so I sort of wrote it by accident, actually. Yeah, I can't write short stories, so there we go.
And just one other thing before I'll ask you to read A Bit of Strange Hotel, if you would. What other writers are, not necessarily an influence on your work, but what sort of writers do you like at the minute?
Oh, well, I suppose at the moment my big love is Anna Kina Schofield. And her new book, Bina, which I just think is just exquisite. I mean, just funny and painful and so well written and so well thought out. The kind of the idea of female friendship, especially in middle age, is really, really interesting. So, very keen on her at the moment.
Can I get you to finish off with a reading from Strange Hotel then?
You can indeed. I'm going to read a section from the middle, when she's in a hotel in Auckland. It is the farthest furthest she has ever been. On a flat earth, she would be at the edge. As it is, to go on might be the shortest way home, and just let the world fold back on itself. For despite some perplexity regarding her current notions of home, and her periodic declarations that that is simply not so, her belief in the planet's curve is secure. It is an unbreachable line, and one of the few of which she has ever been sure, until now, here, in this outermost place. As the ground imperceptibly spins beneath and all around her, the heavens shift. She finds herself thinking she wouldn't object to some more tangible proof it exists. Out there, somewhere, she knows, is the ocean and horizon, with nothing to be seen after it. She can't help envisaging, admittedly, flying in the face of all sense, a great cataract roiling at the deep sea's end towards which she and New Zealand inexorably inch, torn from or flowing to be dragged over the edge and churned into particles of dust or particles of time or whatever becomes of a body once it has attained its finest grade of dismemberment. This may all be a touch cataclysmic, she will admit, especially as on her arrival it was already night, so she has no idea what it looks like out there. That said, in terms of proof, she's not asking for much. Mathematical calculations or satellite photographs, no, really, just a physical hint. Some readily appreciable sensation, for instance, say how toes inevitably touch the ground after heels in a continuous, predictably repeating sequence. Of course, she understands there may be disparities within this pattern too. As far as walking goes, however, it is the expected usual, and in her general indifference to personalized nuance, she does not feel she has been remiss, because who thinks about every step? Well, there are some people who obviously must, but having been fortunate with her health, she does not number herself among them. She wouldn't even think of it now, except it seems the ground has somehow misplaced her confidence in it. Either that, and this would be considerably more abstract, the soles of her feet have begun doubting themselves.
So I've been talking to Emma McBride. We've been talking about her latest novel, Strange Hotel, which is out now in the UK from Faber. Emma, thank you so much for taking the time to tell me about it.
Thank you.
This episode of Little Atoms was produced and presented by me, Neil Denny, edited by Sky Redman, and was first broadcast on Resonance 104.4 FM. Little Atoms is supported by 89UP and hosted by Acast. If you enjoyed the show, please do subscribe, rate us on iTunes, and even tell a friend. Thanks for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.